Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, 20 lines down. The Gemara is continuing to ask questions with regards to an Eved, especially an Eved at Chetzio Eved, Chetzio Ben Chorin, and what's the standing or the lochic status of such an individual. Ibailu, Misha Chetzio Eved, Chetzio Ben Chorin. An individual who is half an Eved, half Ben Chorin, Shikidesh Bat Chorin. He establishes Kiddushin with a regular Israelite. Mahu, what is the status of that Kiddushin? Imtim Salomar. If you want to say, Ben Israel Shamar, the Bat Israel, if you have a regular Israel and a regular Israelite, where he goes to generate Kiddushin with her, and he says to her, Idkachi the Chetzi Mikudeshet. He says, I want you to marry half of me, then the marriage goes through. In that instance, it makes sense because the individual or the man is allowed to marry two women. So his statement is, I want to have Kiddushin with you, but I reserve the right to have Kiddushin with another woman. And that's why he's saying, it goes through because a man is able to establish Kiddushin in such a manner. So where he says, half of me is Mikudeshit, it means that he fully has Kiddushin with this woman, but he reserves the right, by using the term Chetzi, then I can marry another woman, I can take another wife. That's all, we interpret his statement that way, but it works, the Kiddushin works. So now you would think maybe our case should be similar, because here you're talking about an individual as half and half. The Gemara says, Techazia dekule. That's what works over there, because he has the ability to be Mikadesh entirety, his entirety. Halo Chazia dekule. Here, he doesn't have the ability to Mikadesh his other side. I mean, there's a piece of him that he cannot bring into the Kiddushin. So the fact that he's only having half Kiddushin over here is not by decision, but by default. Because he's only Chatzi Ben Chorin and a Chatzi Eved. So maybe you cannot compare the cases. You would have thought to compare the cases and say, just like when the guy says, if I'm half Mikudash to you, it works. So the guy here also said, I'm half Mikudash to you, but it's not really true because here he can't get the other half into the picture. Whereas in the case of the regular Israel, he could have brought the other half into the picture. B'imtim Salomar. So what do you say this? Ben Israel, Hamakadesh Chatzi Isha. A Ben Israel that marries half a woman, Eina mikudeshet. The kiddushin don't go through. Dishier bikinyano, because he left over in his kinyan. The reason being that marrying half a woman doesn't work because in this case you can't interpret his saying as I'm going to marry half of you and then the other half of you will be available to marry someone else because a woman is not allowed to marry two men. So for that reason there is no possibility of saying that the chetzi here has meaning and therefore the kiddushin failed. But the reason it fails over there is because he left over something in the kinyan. Va'evet lo shi'er b'kinyano. In this instance, the evet leaves nothing over in his kinyan, meaning that he does everything that is within his power to be mikadesh with, he uses up. He didn't leave over anything within his kinyan. Or if you even turn it the other way, if you're talking about a shifcha kananit, who is half shifcha kananit, half bat chorin, over there when he's mikadesh, the half, is that half because that's the only half that he can get access to, and therefore he's done a full kinyan with it, versus our case where he's mikadesh, half the woman, but the other half of the woman is still available. So he left over in his kinyan. But in the case of the shifcha kananit, he was mikadesh, every piece that of her that he could be mikadesh at that time. So my, what's the din here? Tashma, let's bring a proof from this. Hemit, misha chetzu evet chetzu ben chorin. This goes back to the brighter that we saw on the top of Mem Bevet Amud Bet. Sure, that kills someone who's a Chetzi Eved, Chetzi Ben Chorin. Notein Chetzi Knas L'Rabo. Half of him, which is the half that belongs to his Adon still, there you pay half the Knas, 30 shekels, or half of that would be 15 shekel kesef to his master. B'chatzi Kofer L'Yor Shav. And the other half of him, which is the Ben Chorin side, you pay Kofer for. And then you pay half that Kofer to his Yorshim, to his inheritors. So now, Chatzi Kofer, as we mentioned yesterday, even though in general we don't say Chatzi Kofer, that's when there is full Kofer and you're trying to pay Chatzi Kofer, like a Tom that kills. We don't say that it's Chatzi Kofer over there because the real obligation is full Kofer and then you're paying half Kofer. Over here, he's paying 100% of the Kofer that is available. The Chatzi Kofer is because only half of him is a Ben Chorin, so it's not equivalent to a normal Chatzi Kofer. It's 100% of the available Kofer of his being a Ben Chorin. All right, so now, this was your question from yesterday. V'yamarz kiddushav lav kiddushin, yoshim min olay. If you say that he has no kiddushin over here, how does he have any offspring? Because you're saying you pay out to his yoshim, Well, then if he doesn't have Yorshim, then what are you talking about paying out to Yorshim? How's the only way he could have Yorshim? Is if he possibly could have gotten married, and if he got married and he has children, those children are miyuchas acharav. If they're miyuchas acharav, now he has Yorshim. But if you tell me he has no ability to generate kiddushin, then where are the Yorshim coming from? So Amar Rav Adarbaba, kishe asau treifa. It's a case where he didn't kill him, the shor, but rather he effectively killed him, which is that he made him into a treifa. So just like a treifa is already considered to be a walking dead, so therefore if he's killed at that point, there's no chiyuv mita, or there's no obligation with regards to if the animal kills him, so to it in the reverse. If you make the individual into a treifa, that's the equivalent of killing him. So here, the shor made him into a treifa, but during that period that he's a treifa, he could acquire himself, get full freedom, umay yorshav, and then what does it mean is yorshim over here? Nafshei. Yorshav doesn't mean his yorshim, but rather nafshei, he himself will collect the money because he's still alive, right? The yorshim are not entitled to the money as long as he's still alive. So, what it means is that he was killed by becoming a treifa, and yorshim mean him because he is still around to collect on the monies that he's due. Amar Rava, shtei tshuvot b'davar. I don't like that explanation for two reasons. Chad, the yorshim k'tani. It says in the Braita, that is yorshim. And you're telling me here, yorshim don't mean yorshim, that means him. That's not a good explanation. Vod, kofer hu. And on top of that, it says kofer. He says, when it comes to a shor shenagach, a shor that gores and then kills someone, that you pay 30 shekel. Over there in the psukim, the word mita is never mentioned. So over there, you could possibly interpret the psukim to mean, even though he's not dead, but he's a treifa, that you're obligated. On the other hand, by the psukim of kofer, it says explicitly that he died. Ve'mit ish oisha. That he killed the individuals. So then, when you mention the word mita, mita has only one meaning. Dead. Dead means not treifa, that he will die, but literally that he's dead. Vamar Reish Lakish, kofer emish talem elachar mita. And Reish Lakish explains to us that the kofer is only paid after mita because of the word ve'mit ish oisha that's mentioned in the pasuk. So this explanation of a treifa might work for the shloshim of Eved, but it does not work for a kofer. And there's no way someone is paying kofer unless the person is actually dead. And so therefore, that explanation, the Braita, fails on two levels. One is that the word yorshim, you're reinterpreting to mean him. And number two is you're telling me that even though he's not dead, you're going to pay kofer. That's just not true. Person has to be a mit isho isha. Only if the shor kills someone do they pay kofer. Kill, literally kill them, not figuratively kill them in the sense of a treifa. Elama Rava, so Rava has to give an alternative view here. Ro'oi lito, ve'eno, eno chanami. That he's entitled to it, but there'll be nobody to collect on his behalf. He will not have yorshim. The case is, if there were yorshim, they would be entitled to this chatzi kofer. But the problem is here, is this is an individual who doesn't have yorshim. So half the fine, which is the 15 shekel, will go to his adon. The other half, which would have been half the kofer, would have gone to his yorshim, but there are no yorshim. So the mazik keeps that money, even though technically he's chayav to give it to his yorshim who don't exist. Since they don't exist, there's nothing to speak about. So therefore, you don't have a proof again from this braita as to whether yorshim or no yorshim. It's possible that here he doesn't have yorshim, and even though the braita mentions yorshim, the reason it mentions yorshim is because if there were, it's a theoretical statement that if there were a yorshim, that's what would happen. But unfortunately, in this case, there will be no yorshim. So here, Tosfot asks an interesting question, which is that the Gemara here correlates between kiddushin and yorshim, which is not exactly or not necessarily true. We know that even from arayot. If an individual has an illicit relationship and then has a mamzer that is born of that illicit relationship, that mamzer, even though they can't marry into the kahal, as far as Yerusha are concerned, they're a full-fledged Yorish of that individual. So the ability to have Kiddushim is not necessarily correlated with the ability to have Yorshim. So why does the Gemara here assume that if you can't have Yorshim or can have Yorshim, that would define for us whether he could have Kiddushim or not have Kiddushim? The two issues are not correlated. They could be independent, completely independent. So Tosafot says, I don't understand here. If an Eved would marry a woman, and the child that's born of that Eved Kanani and the Israelit, whether you classify that as a mamzer, or whether you classify it as a normal child, wouldn't matter, that individual is a Yoresh of the Eved Kanani. And so why don't we classify it as a Yoresh here, even without Kiddushin? Tosfot answers, it's a nice answer, which is, by an Eved Kanani, in general, he does not have Yichus. So the question here of Yichus, Tosfot says, is dependent on Kiddushin. Generally for Yisrael, if you have a licit relationship between two parties, each party independently has the ability to create Kiddushin, and others have the ability to have Kiddushin with those individuals. It happens to be that this relationship is illicit, and therefore they can't create Kiddushin in this particular instance. So therefore, the product of that relationship will be a Yoresh, or will have Yichus connected to the parties. Other than here, if the Eved Kanani is unable to make or to generate Kiddushin, that's a sign that he has no Yichus, because his inability to create Kiddushin is not particularly with this woman, it's period. He has no ability to create Kiddushin. That is a sign, or a siman, that he has no Yichus. And so that's what the Gemara is after. The Gemara is not after that this is a reason, but rather this is a sign or an indication. By the Eved, if he can create Kiddushin, that's a sign that he does have Yichus, and therefore he can generate Yoshin. If he can't create Kiddushin, that's a sign he has no Yichus, and doesn't matter whether he has or doesn't have Kiddushin, now he won't produce Yoshim that are miyuchas to him. And that's why the Gemara correlates the two over here, but that's a unique issue with regards to Eved Kenani. Okay, Amar Rava, Kashem Shemekadesh Chatzisha Ina Mikudeshet, just like a case where an individual tries to be Mikadesh, half a woman, it doesn't work. Kach Chetzia Shivcha V'Chetzia Bat Chorin Shinit Kadesha Ein Kiddushah Kiddushin. So too, an individual tries to marry a Shivcha Kananit who is half Shivcha Kananit, half Bat Chorin, it fails. So he basically correlates the two cases and says, just like you can't marry half a woman, you can't marry half a woman here because she still has the other half, which is a Shivcha Kananit, it doesn't work. Dorosh Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Kishem Shemekadesh Chatzi Isha Ina Mikudeshet, Kach Chetzia Shivcha V'Chetzia Bat Chorim Shinit Kadesha Ina Mikudeshet. So Rabba Bar Rav Huna was Doresh in public, this same concept or correlation that says, just like you can't marry half a woman, you can't marry a Chetzia Shivcha V'Chetzia Bat Chorim. Amarle Rav Chista, after the drosh, Rav Chista goes after him and says, Mi Domi, how can you compare them? We just said before, when the Gemara was presenting the question, that you could differentiate between the questions. Hotam shi'er b'kinyano, hachalo shi'er b'kinyano. In the case of marrying half the woman, the other half of the woman was available, and you did not take advantage of that. You did not engage that other half of the woman. But over here, by the case of the chetzi shivchia kananit and chetzi abat chorin, you engaged the entirety of the woman that was available to be engaged at that time. So the two cases may not be parallel. Hadar ukim rabba baravuna mora le. After his Rabbi Varuna put up an Amora again, as we always say, an Amora is someone who spoke over what the Chacham was Doresh, the equivalent of an amplifier, and sometimes a translator, depending if the language difference. So when he puts an Amora lay, he means that he's going to be Doresh in public again. V'darash, v'amach shela azot tachat yadecha. These are psukim in Yishayahu, actually we saw together in the Gemara in Chagiga, which the Gemara darshins, latid davo, there'll be no Torah. And they'll fund some guy that knows a little bit of Torah, and they'll say to him, you should be a katzin, you should be a leader over us, because nobody knows anything, and then they'll make anybody who knows any little bit of Torah a leader over them. And there, when they're describing this individual, they say, v'amach shela azot mitachad yadecha. This item is under your hand, meaning that you have Torah. Here the Torah is called a mach shela. Why is the Torah compared to a mach shela? A mach shela is something that you stumble over, something that you trip over. So the way that Rashi describes it is, She'ein adamo made al mitatan. A person doesn't get to the bottom of Torah, the truth of Torah, achi kashel behen, till he makes a mistake, lehorot ta'ut. Because he makes a mistake in his psak, and then ve'yachlimu, and he's embarrassed by this, or they'll embarrass him, ve'unotein leiv umevin. Meaning that when you're learning, plain learning, then a person thinks, they speak, they have ideas, and they suggest things. But until you're on the hook for psak halacha, then a person doesn't really get to the bottom line and really come to a decisive conclusion of the sugya. And so, first of all, that's an important thing, that there's a difference between someone who learns in a theoretical manner versus someone who learns la'alocha and has to give psak alocha. And number two is, once you give psak alocha, then sometimes you are wrong. And when you're wrong, it's really embarrassing and really difficult, and that actually causes you to work harder at it and to try harder and to investigate further. And so that's what it means, hamach shela. Once you've made a mistake, that gets you to really understand the halacha and really understand the Torah. And that's what he's suggesting over here. According to Rashi, others suggest that in this particular case, it's not a general statement, a generic statement about Torah, but rather a statement in this case, this mistake has brought me to the point where now I understand better, and now I have the right conclusion. And a person does not get to the bottom of the Torah or this thought unless he trips up over them. Now when he went back out and gave the drasha again, he says, I made a mistake. And even though generally when a person engages half a woman, it does not work, but if you do it with a shivcha that is half shivcha, half bat chorin, it works. My taima, hotam shir b'kinyano. In the case where you normally engage a regular bat yisrael, you left over in the kinyan, that's a failure. Hachalo shir b'kinyano. Over here, you did not leave over anything, and therefore there's no failure because you took whatever you could take at that moment, and therefore the kiddushin are to face and do go through. That's interesting. The Gemara in Yevamot says with regards to Chetzi Eved and Chetzi Ben Chorin that he has a problem because even he himself will produce a mamzer because his Chetzi that is free has proper kiddushin with the woman. His Chetzi that's still an Eved then is engaging with an Eshadish because it's married to his other half. So basically the Gemara in Yevamot stipulates that in the case of Chetzi Eved, Chetzi Ben Chorin, that he actually has an extramarital affair, he himself, with his own wife, because of the Chatzi Eved in him. So that's the way the Gemara in Yevamot concludes. That's what Tosafot mentions over here. By the way, that was where his question came from, that the product of that marriage is a mamzer. But a mamzer still is a yoresh. And that was the nature of his question, that you can have a yoresh without kiddushin being tofsin. Anyway, that's what happened according to the Gemara in Yevamot with the Chatzi Eved and the Chatzi Ben Chorin. Amar Rav Sheshet, Kishem Shemekadesh Chatzi Isha Eino Mekudeshet, Kach Chetzia Shivcha V'Chetzia Bat Chorim Shenitkadsha Ein Kiddushiha Kiddushin. So again, here we have Rav Sheshet reiterating what we heard already from number one, Rava, and what we originally heard from Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. They all say that this is the equivalent of marrying a half a woman and it doesn't go through. Rav Chista pushed back against Rabbi Bar Rav Huna and says, maybe not, they're different. And Rabbi Bar Rav Huna then changed his mind and adopted that position that Rav Chista suggested. V'imlach shach adam lomar, and someone whispers you to say, Izui shivcha charufa, what are you going to do with the case of Shivcha Harufa? Shivcha Harufa, which is found in Parshat Kedushin, the case in the Torah, which is a Chetziah Shivcha Chananit, Chetziah Bat Chorin, that is engaged as a Rusin with an Eved Ivri. That shows you that you have Kiddushin because the Eved Ivri has Kiddushin with her. So Chetziah Shivcha V'Chetziah Bat Chorin, Hami'urasa, the Eved Ivri, that is engaged to an Eved Ivri, I mean halachically engaged, it means he has Kiddushin with her. So you see here that you can generate Kiddushin. Alma bati rusehi. Here you see that she has the ability to generate kiddushin. Amalo klach etzel Rabbi Yishmael. Go to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael is the alternate opinion about what a shivcha harufa is. It's machloket between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yishmael as to what a shivcha harufa is. Rabbi Kiva says the opinion that we see here, which is chetzia shivcha, chetzia bat chorin. On the other hand, Rabbi Yishmael says she's kula shivcha knanit. That's the case of shivcha harufa. It's a full-fledged Shivcha Knanit that's engaged to an Eved Ivri. The Shivcha Knanit, but itrusehi, is a Shivcha Knanit able to create Kiddushin? We know for sure not. If she's completely a Shivcha Knanit, she has no Kiddushin. Kiddushin is a unique institution for Jews. It does not exist outside of the Jewish nation, which is that other nations have Nisuin, but they don't have this concept called Kiddushin. The Rambam talks about that in his introduction to the Dinim with regards to Kiddushin, which is that Kiddushin derives from the word Kiddusha, and that Kiddusha is unique to Klal Yisrael, and Kiddushin is an aspect of Kiddusha, that we create this halachic connection prior to the Nisuin. But that's uniquely to someone who is a Ben Yisrael or a Bat Yisrael. Shivcha Knanit clearly does not have that. So over here, if you believe like Rabbi Yishmael, it's a full-fledged Shivcha Knanit, and she's engaged to an Eved Ivri, you're using the term erusin, even though it's not applicable. What is he telling you through that? That the word erusin is used here not in the literal sense, but rather in a figurative sense. Elamayit l'chalem eimar, my mi'ureset. What does mi'ureset mean over here? Mi'yuchedet. That she's designated for the Eved Ivri. So now, the same thing. Hachanami, you're going to say the same thing with the chatzi shivcha. And chatzi bat chorin, when it says the word erusin, I'll just interpret it the same way that you would by Rabbi Shmuel it is. My mureset, miyuchedet. We're not talking about real kiddushin, we're just talking about designated for. Now the question of how miyuchedet works, meaning that if there is no erusin and no kiddushin, what does being miyuchedet mean over here? What type of halachic ramification does it really have? So does miyuchedet means like literally how we're translating designated? That should have no halachic standing. If someone has an extramarital affair, quote unquote, with this shifcha kananit or chetzi shifcha kananit chetzi bat korin, why should be miyuchedet have any meaning? So what you have to believe here is miyuchedet is that they actually have nisuin, but she is then designated. How non-Jews generate nisuin is through chazakah, which is that the man and wife live together, and she is miyuchedet, she is delineated, designated to be specifically his wife through that relationship, through their living together. Common law marriage, in a sense, the miyuchedet over here, you would have to say something similar to that, that she's designated because she has been given to him as a wife or as a woman to be his wife. So Amar Rav Chisda, chetzi shivchia v'chetzi bat chorim, shinit katsha d'ruvein. So you have this half shivcha kananit, half bat chorim that gets engaged halachically to Ruvain, her half. V'nishtachara. Then they free the other half. V'chazra v'nitkasha l'shimon. And then, after she's freed completely, she gets engaged to Shimon. But that's not the end of it, because Ruvain and Shimon are brothers. So you have two brothers here. The first brother got engaged to her while she was a chetzia shivcha, chetzia bat chorim. The second brother got engaged to her after she was completely free. Umeitu shnehem, and then they both die. Mityabemet lelevi. She has yibum with their third brother, Levi. Veina ni koreba eshet shnei metim. And we don't call her the wife of two metim. The Gemara here is referencing a case in Yevamot with Rashi says to us over here. In a case where Reuven was married to a woman. Reuven passes away, and Shimon and Levi are the brothers available to have yibum with her. Shimon does ma'amar with her. He does the, whether it's the Rabbanan or the Oraita, ma'amar will make a difference, but assuming here that it's the Rabbanan, he does ma'amar with her and then dies. Levi cannot perform Yibum with this woman because it looks like she's coming from two Meitim. She was married to Reuven, she had ma'amar with Shimon, and now Levi, who's going to marry her, looks like he's taking Yibum from two husbands, meaning that both from Reuven and from Shimon, therefore it's disqualified. So the Gemara is saying something similar over here, which is, why isn't this the same case as that? Which is here, she had a halachic engagement to Reuven, then a halachic engagement to Shimon, both die, and again, the Shimon's engagement happened before Reuven died, and before there was any divorce. So they technically married her, both of them married her, and now they both passed away, and now Levi is going to marry this woman. Why isn't she a product of two brothers rather than one brother, and she should be restricted? Mar says, because over here, manavshach, ikidushe Reuven kidushin, because if Reuven's kidushin were successful, kidushe Shimon, not kidushin, then Shimon's kidushin are meaningless, because she was already married to his brother. On the other hand, vikidushe the Shimon kidushin, if Shimon's kidushin are successful, that means that kidushe Reuven, lab kidushin, were not kidushin. So in essence, she was only married to one of these two brothers, either Reuven or Shimon, we don't know which, but it doesn't really matter because it was only one of them. And therefore, when she falls to Levi, he's marrying the wife of one of his two brothers, and not both of his brothers. That's what the Gemara is saying. Levi is allowed to perform Yibum here, as opposed to the case in Yevamot, where they couldn't do such a thing. Rashi says over here, but we don't know which one it is. Why? Because we have a safek based on the memrot of the Amoraim before. The memrot of the Amoraim before were, Chatzi Shivchia Bechatzi Bat Chorin. Does Kiddushin work? Or does it not work? Rav Chisda, Rabba Bar Ravuna said yes. The other Amorim, Rova and Rav Sheshit said it doesn't work. So you have a safek whether that type of kiddushin is tofes. We have a safek. We don't know which way it goes, but they are mutually exclusive. If it works up front, then in the back end it doesn't work. If it doesn't work up front, then the back end did work. But both of them cannot be married to this woman. Now Tosafot points out that the case in Yevamot is a case midrabanan. It's a case where he has ma'amar. So then why you bring a case of ma'amar where you have Durabanan and where Choshesh, that it looks like she's coming from Shnei Meitim, and all of a sudden you bring it into this case over here? So Tosafot says, Yishlamar, da'otam be'ma'amar Durabanan, have yezikat bet yevamim Durabanan. Ava'ba'alma, have do'raita. But in general, this din is not just a din Durabanan that it looks bad, or it looks like two Meitim are married to her, but it is a din do'raita that you cannot derive from two brothers coming to this woman. Rashi says the safek is whether we paskin that you can have kiddushin with the chatzi shivcha, chatzi bat chorin. The other hand, Tosafot says he doesn't think Rashi's explanation is correct. He says, because, kasha, the Rav Chisda gufei, Rav Chisda before, who is the Bala Memra over here, had a conclusive understanding before. Rav Chisda is the one who criticized Rabba Bar Rav Huna and said, they're not comparable. And there is Kiddushin with a Chatzi Shivka and Chatzi Bat Chorin. So Rav Chisda is posing the question over here about Reuben and Shimon. He already has an answer to that question. He says it works. So the first Kiddushin work and Reuben's married to her. So why is Rav Chisda posing a question as a Safek in which he already has a conclusion? Therefore, Tosafot says the Gemara Safek, or Rav Chisda Safek, is the upcoming Gemara. The next statement in the Gemara, which is a Machloket Amoraim, that is the Safek that this Gemara is dealing with. Obviously, Rashi's explanation is stronger, that the Gemara brings a Safek about something we've already discussed, which makes more sense. Tosafot's problem with that is that you have Rav Chisda as the Bala Memra here. And Rav Chisda was one of the Amoraim before, who had a conclusive stance on this, and says that Kiddushin does work by Chetzi Shivcha and Chetzi Bat Chorin. So that's why Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's explanation. Tosafot's explanation deals with the next line here, which is Itmar. Chetzi Shivcha and Chetzi Bat Chorin, she need Katsha the Ruvain, got married to him, Nishtachara, and then the other half was freed, V'chazra v'nit Katsha the Shimon. And then afterwards gets married to Shimon. Over here, it doesn't matter whether they're brothers or not brothers. Simply a question of who's married to her now. Rav Yosef Bar Chama Amar Rav Nachman, Pak'u Kiddushei Rishon. The Kiddushim of the first one are destroyed or removed by her being freed. Vizera Amar Rachman, Gamru Kiddushei Rishon. No, the Kiddushim of the first one now are completed. Machloket about what happens over here. Now, the way that Rav Yosef Bar Chama says is Pak'u. The Kiddushim of the Rishon disappear. The way that Rashi describes that is because once she is fully freed, she now becomes a full-fledged Bat Yisrael. That means now she has changed her status from Chatzi Shivcha Knanit into a full-fledged Yisraelit. That is what otherwise known as a conversion. A conversion has a din that is Ketinok Shenola Dami. That when you have a conversion, it's as if you are a brand new person starting afresh. Rashi says that's the reason the Kedushin fail over here. V'afilu l'man d'amar mikudeshet. Rashi says, even according to the Manda Amar that says, Chetzi Shivcha and Chetzi Bat Chorin works, the Kiddushin take effect. Nevertheless, according to Rav Yosef Bar Chama, once she is then fully freed, those Kiddushin go by the wayside, because, Shrei Nishtana Gufa V'Aviyelah Kikatan Shinolad. Her status changed to a full Bat Yisrael. That status change is the equivalent of a conversion, and that conversion makes her into a Katan Shinolad dummy, and everything that happened before is wiped out. So she had Kiddushin for a period of time, but that Kiddushin is terminated by her conversion. That's the way that Rashi explains it. Other Rishonim explain it like there's a failure, meaning that she had Kiddushin up front for half of her. When she then becomes free, do the Kiddushin basically spread to the other half? Does the Kiddushin automatically expand to take over the entirety of the woman? Or the fact now that she's a free woman and there's another half, now does the Kiddushin become basically Kiddushin with half a woman? And Kiddushin with half a woman, everybody agrees, fails. So maybe the failure is not in the fact that she converted and she wipes out all history, but rather now that she is fully free, you only have Kiddushin with half of her. Unless you go now and engage the other half, you're like engaged to half a woman and you have a leftover in your kinyan and it fails because of that reason. So that's the other way to explain Pukka Kiddushin here. On the other hand, Rabbi Zerum of Nachman says that once she's freed, the Kiddushin expand basically to encompass the entire woman. Before he got as much as the woman he could, which is half, as soon as she now becomes fully free, it expands to become the full woman. Tosfot over here asks about a question in a case of shutfim, that own a behema. Your partner's an own a behema, and one of the partners is mekadesh, his half of the behema. Then he buys the other half of the behema, which is basically the equivalent of our case over here, which is that he has kiddushin with half of this woman, and then the other half is freed, so he basically can acquire that other half. Tosafot says over there, the Gemara makes it clear that he has to be Mekadesh the other half. And it does not spread to the other half of the Behema automatically. Why don't we say that these cases are comparable, that over here too, the Kiddushin does not automatically extend to the other half of the woman, and he has to engage her actively, like what Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama is saying, versus what Rabbi Zerub Amar Rav Nachman is saying. So Tosafot in the end says that the cases are not comparable because, it says, V'afagam dahotam midamile Mekadesh chatzi isha. Even though the Gemara there explicitly in Kiddushin compares that to getting engaged to a half a woman, it says nevertheless, lo kasha mide, the mighty shaper dehecha deika dat acheret, lo pashte bekula. Because over there, it's speaking about when you have someone else's control or mindset there, that it doesn't automatically expand. Inami, ika lemeimar de behema shel shnei shutfim, shesheir bikinyono tzat, shere behema ita bat hekdesh, levikach lo gamre, vahocha ketzit shivcha lo ita bichlal Kiddushin. Tosafot differentiates between the cases in two levels. One is that over there, when the behemah doesn't spread to the other half is because there was another owner. And that other owner could block the kiddushin from spreading. And therefore, when he finally buys that other half, he has to actively engage it. Over here, the other half of the woman, it wasn't being blocked actively by someone. It was just simply her status. As soon as that status changes, maybe it can spread. Number two is that in the case of the shutfim, when he was mikadesh the behemah, both sides of the behemah were able to be nitkadesh. It's just that he didn't have ownership over there. So there was an ability. Over here, he has no ability to be mikadesh the other half of his shivcha, because she is a shivcha. As soon as it gets opened up, then maybe it spreads automatically. So Tosafot differentiates between those cases on two levels, and says that we can't use that case of the shnei shutfim and the behemah to explain our case over here. So now Amar Rabbi Zera Kavate Didi Mistavro, my explanation is right, that the Kedushei Rishon are finished when she then is freed. Dichtiv, lo yumtu, ki lo chupasha. By the Shifra Harufa, it says that they will not be put to death for this extramarital affair because she was not freed. Ha chupasha, yumtu. If she was freed, they would be put to death. Here's an Eved Ivri who's engaged to a Chetzia Shifra Chetzia Bat Chorin. And it says the reason that there's no death penalty for having an affair with this chetzia woman is because she was not freed. Implying that if she was freed, there would be a death penalty, meaning that the Eved Ivri's Kiddushin would expand and then be completed by the freedom of this woman. And they'd be fully married if the other half of her was freed. It says, Amar Leih Baye, Ulatana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. Wait a minute, what are you going to do again? Tana Debei Shmuel, Damar Rabbi Shifcha, Kanani, Tamu, Resed Eved Ivri. What are you going to do with the case? The other opinion about what a Shifcha Harufa is. The other opinion is Rabbi Shmuel, who says that a Shifcha Harufa is literally a Shifcha Kananit. And therefore you have an Eved Ivri now engaged to a Shifcha Kananit. And now what are you going to say now? Hachanami Tichich Pasha Yumtu. Now if you free her, all of a sudden you're going to have a death penalty here? The original Kiddushin were meaningless between the Eved Ivri and the Shifcha Kananit, as we said before, that a non-Jew doesn't have a din in Kiddushin at all. So how can you claim here that if they're freed, all of a sudden that Kiddushin spreads and becomes halachically binding? There was nothing in the first place to become halachically binding in the back end. So that can't be. Elamai, Yitlecha, Memeimar. So what do you have to say? Shuchupasha, V'chazra, V'nitkacha. That when she's freed, and then they get re-engaged, then there'll be a death penalty. Hachinami in our case too, Shuchupasha, V'chazra, V'nitkacha. That the case of Chupasha doesn't mean that when she's freed automatically there will be a death penalty, but rather, when she's freed, and then they redo their Kiddushin, then she'll be a full-fledged married woman, and then Yumtu. But that's not automatic, just because they were engaged beforehand, that when she's freed, that will become a full-fledged wife afterwards. So I'm Ravuna Bar Katina, Rav Yitzchak, Masib Isha Chat. There was an incident with this woman, Shechetzia Shivcha Vechetzia Bat Chorin, Vikafu Et Rabba Vasa Bat Chorin. They compel the master to free her. Now this goes against the Gemara that we saw on Daf Mem Aleph. Gemara Daf Mem Aleph says that this was unique to an Eved who was a Chatzi Eved Kanani, Chatzi Ben Chorin, because over there he has the problem that he can't marry a Bat Chorin and he can't marry a Shifcha Kananit, and therefore he's Batel from Pru Urvur, Piri Arivya. So that was unique to an Eved. Tosafot told us over there that that does not apply to a Shifcha Kananit, because she's not obligated in Piri Arivya. Over here we have a case where Beit Din is compelling them to free the other half of the Shifcha Kananit. Why? So Gemara says, because it's Keman, that bright is according to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is the opinion in the Yevamot, who says that the mitzvah Piri Arivya does not only apply to the man, but also applies to the woman. Therefore, there will be an equation of equality, which is the same way by an Eved, we would compel him to free him because of Piri Arivya, so too by Shifcha, we would free her. And that's what the Gemara is suggesting over here. This bright is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Damara Shneim Hu Omer, Vayavarechu Tam Elokim, Vayomer, Pru Urvu Milu Et Aretz, that applies to both man and woman. I mean, it's written in the plural there, the command seems to be to both of them. The only reason that we don't say like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is because it says Vikiv Shua. And the Gemara Darshan's on there, Misha Takol Ichbosh. The one who goes out and conquers is the one who is commanded in Pru Urvu, not the woman. But according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who both parties are in Nitztaveh in Pru Urvu, then equally when you have a Shifcha who cannot get married, we will force the owner to free her, just like by an Eved, we would force the owner to free him so that they can get married and they can engage in the Shevet Yitzharah to populate the world. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that's not the reason. Lo, that's wrong. Mina gefker na guba. This is again what we saw back on Daf Lamed Chet, which is that, you're right, generally we will not compel the master to free the Shifcha, who's Chetzi Shifcha Kananit, and Chetziah Bat Chorin, even though she can't get married. because she's not nitztaveh on Peru or Vu. On the other hand, if this causes problems in society, meaning that her status is detrimental to society at large, then we will force the master to free her. What happened here is because she couldn't get married, she became promiscuous and she was engaging with men and consorting with men because she couldn't get married. Either because she couldn't get married or because she didn't have a husband to watch over her, she was consorting and causing problems in society. So we compelled the master to free her so then she could marry someone who would either take care of her or put her in a predicament where she would no longer need to be promiscuous to engage with men. And so that's the reason over here. It's not because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, because of the unique circumstances that we compel the master to free her. Next Mishnah, again, of course, a Mishnah of Tikkun Olam. This is something we already was implicit in the Gemara, and we mentioned before, that if you sell your Eved Kanani to a non-Jew, all the Chutz La'aretz, or to outside of Eretz Yisrael, meaning that he was living in Eretz Yisrael, and you sell him to go to Chutz La'aretz, Yatza ben Chorin. He is given his freedom. He's automatically freed over here. The reason being, by a Oved Kochavim, is because, if you sell him to an Oved Kochavim, remember, an Eved Kanani has a din like an Isha and Mitzvot, and he's able to perform mitzvot, and he's supposed to perform mitzvot. He has a chatzi giyor. He's half converted over here. When you sell him to Oved Kochavim, that's going to take away his ability to perform mitzvot. And that's why we're penalizing him over here. In the case of Chutz La'aretz, he's going to lose out on the mitzvot that's tluyot ba'aretz. And you're forcing him out of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. We're going to penalize you again that the Eved goes free. Rashi claims here that the Eved goes free only in Barach, if he runs away. So if he runs away from the Oved Kochavim, he'll be granted his freedom. Tosafot and others, they ask, what do you mean in Barach? He gets his freedom. What do you need then, the Knas of Chachamim? If he runs away from his Oved Kochavim, he'd be free either way. So the problem here, or the nature of the sale over here, remember, is that a Jew has a Kinyan Aguf in the Eved Kanani. When he sells him to an Oved Kochavim, he cannot sell the Kinyan Aguf to Oved Kochavim. We learned that back on Lamed Chet, that there is no Kinyan Aguf for an Oved Kochavim and another Oved Kochavim, just like by Yisrael, there's no Kinyan Aguf in another Yisrael. And therefore, he only can buy the Maaseh Yadayim from him. So the Jew who sells the Eved Kanani to this guy only sells him for Maaseh Yadav, not for his Gufo. That means that there's still a retained ownership of the Jew in this Eved Kanani. So if he runs away, yes, he'd be free of the mastership of this Oved Kochavim, but the Jew technically could reassert his ownership because he still has some semblance of ownership in him, whether it's just the Easter aspect, according to some, even the Mammon aspect there. And therefore, what we say is that he's then released from that master. And this master will have to give him a get shichur. Now, even though a Maimar said earlier that a mafkir avdo, someone who frees his slave of shibud, of his monetary ownership, then ain't lo takana. There's no way to fix him because the get shichur is no longer effective. We had alternate opinions who disagreed with that. But according to a Maimar, why does it work over here when he gives him a get shichur? So again, what the Tosafot suggests is that over here, when he leaves over this Isur, he also has monetary ownership over here. And that's what Tosafot says in the end. V'yishlamar, delo dami lamafkir dobin kochavim, delo kanile elo maseya dav. That mafkir avdo is different than selling him to an Oved Kochavim, because he only sells him for maseya daim. V'kati pashle gab Yisrael memona. The Yisrael still has monetary ownership residual on this slave. To kanile the knas ulev ladot. He still owns him for any knas that would be paid if he's killed, as well as the vladot, any babies that are born would belong to him. And he's not completely free until he gets a get shichur, but here he gets the get shichur works because he still has monetary ownership in him. In the case of Amemar, Hamafkir Abdul, you've released or relinquished all monetary control, and that's why you can't give a get shichur, because you don't own him anymore to give the get shichur. Over here, you still own certain aspects of the Eved, and that's why a get shechur would work according to a Meimar. Meimar says, "Tanan banan, mocher avdol oved kochavim yatzad lechirut v'tzarech get shechur mirabo arishon." He requires a get shechur mirabo arishon from the Israel. Am Rav Shimon Gamliel b'med during moving shlo katav alov ono. That's only if he didn't write an ono for him. Aval katav alov ono zehu shechuro. If he writes an ono, then he's automatically free. My ono. What does that mean that he writes an ono? He writes basically a declaration of disownership or relinquishing of control. He says, if you run away from your new master, I will not exert any control over you. So basically what he needs is a document evidencing the fact that he's freed so that the Israel cannot reassert ownership over him. So either that comes through a get shichrur, or that comes with a preemptive document that says, basically, if you run away, you attain your freedom. In either case, then he has evidence of the fact that this Jew cannot reassert ownership or mastership over him, and therefore you don't need a get shechrur in that instance. Tarabanan, lava alav min oved kochavim. He borrows money from a non-Jew, and he uses his eved kanani as collateral. Kevin shasalo oved kochavim nimuso. Once the oved kochavim makes him into his nimus, again an undefined term that the Gemara will have to deal with, yetzal cheirut. He goes free automatically. My nimuso. I'm Ravuna Bayuda, Nashke. Nimuso is a Nashke. The way that Rashi translates Nashke over here is that it's some sort of slave medallion that slaves used to have to either wear, whether it's a bracelet, a necklace, or an earring, or a medallion of sorts that indicated that they were a slave or owned by this individual. So once a non-Jew puts his medallion on this slave, he goes free. Meaning that the Knas Chachamim kicks in, that you've now sold him to this Oved Kochavim, and now he goes free. So Meiti Rav Sheshet, is that really the meaning of the word Nimuso over here? Because Harisim Vachaki wrote, Harisim Bate Avot, Harisim are sharecroppers that work for a percentage of the land output. Chakirot are people who pay a fixed fee to use the land. They work the land and they pay a fixed fee to the owner of the land, and then they take whatever's in excess of that fixed fee. Risei Beit Avot are someone who have, through Yerusha, have the ability as sharecroppers to work the land. So then, Ovei Kochavim, Shemashkein Sadeo Yisrael. In this case, the non-Jew who owns the property gives it over as collateral to the Jew who lent him money. Afopi Shasalo Nimuso. Even though there's a nimus over here, turah min ha-maser. The Jew is still not chayav in maser. The property still belongs to the goy. And assuming that there is a kinyan for Ovei Kochavim to mafkia kedushat haaretz over here, and that's why there's no maser. So therefore, it doesn't go over to the possession of the Jew in order to be chayav in masrot, even though he gave it as a mashkon. But here, you see the word nimuso used. And clearly here, the meaning of nimuso, v'isakadavcha nashke. Well, if you say that it means a medallion, a slave medallion, sadeba nashkehi, since when is a field a slave or can wear a medallion? It's not relevant by a field. So obviously that is not the meaning of the word nimuso. El amar of sheshet, zman. Nimuso means time. Time here means when the loan becomes due. So when the loan comes due, then the din will be such that when it comes, loan comes due and he defaults on the payment, if the Eved Kanani was his collateral and he defaults on the payment, then automatically he goes free at that point because he sold him to an Oved Kochavim by defaulting on the loan. On the other hand, the other way around, if you have a Sadeh where it comes to the Goy defaulting on the loan and now the Sadeh is a collateral to you, there you won't pay my throat. So there's obviously a problem here, which is they're inconsistent in what's happening. And that's what the Gemara says here, Kash Azman Azman. That automatically generates a stira between the two Braitot. Because one Braita says when the Jew defaults on the loan, the goy gets ownership over the Eved Kanani, and then the Knas goes into effect. But when the non-Jew defaults on the loan, the Jew doesn't get ownership of the land to be Chayav in Masrot. So then you're saying two different dinim with regards to Nimuso. Marseille's Lokasha. Ha demat zmanei, ha telo demat zmanei. This is a very difficult explanation. I'm not sure how the Gemara proposes it, but they say the word Nimuso means zman, the zman of default. So now the Gemara is explaining that in one case he defaulted, in one case, he did not default. And that's the difference between the cases here. In the case of the Eved Kanani, he defaulted on the loan. And therefore, the Goy gets the Eved Kanani, and it's as if he sold him, equivalent to selling him to the Goy. And that's why the Knas kicks in. In the case here, the Goy did not default on the loan. So even though the field is a Mashkon, nevertheless, it doesn't come into the Jew's possession. You have to be Chayav Maser, because he didn't default on the loan. Gemara says, Elagabi Eved Demata Zimnei, Tzaricha Lameimar. Why do you have to tell me that when the Jew defaults on the loan, and then the Eved Kanani goes over to the guy, that that's the equivalent of Mechira. That's so obvious. That if the guy defaults on the loan, and the guy collects his collateral, that's the equivalent of a sale. You're basically selling for his value to replace the default on the loan. It's the equivalent of a forward sale that was done earlier, and now becomes a full-fledged slave because he doesn't have to pay back the money. So that doesn't make sense that that's what the price is telling you. That's so obvious that you wouldn't need it. Ella, idi v'idi delo matas zmane. Both cases are a case where they did not default on the loan. The kalo kasha, ha legufa, ha lepeira. The difference is in the nature of the ownership that is taking place over here. Now Rashi claims that the nature of the difference is here. Kai eved, kavabo zman legufo. By the eved, they set up a time where if there was a default, then he would get full ownership over the eved kanani, meaning the non-Jew would get full ownership. Shim lo yiten lo ad oto zman ye gufo chalut ove kochavim. Umi achshav haya mishtabed bo. And immediately he took the Eved Kanani into his possession. He came into Zilzel, but the Kanta de Rabbanan, Dasrulam Ocherlo Eved Ovid Kochavim, Kansuaf Gabdolo Mata Zimne. So even though the Eved Kanani only goes over to the Ovid Kochavim once there's a default, that was the nature of the loan, nevertheless, before the default, he loses the Eved Kanani. Because of the fact that he's Mizalz on this Takana Kochavim, put the Eved Kanani in this position, and the Ovid Kochavim took the Eved Kanani, and already is being Mishtabed in him and using him, we said, even though he hasn't defaulted yet, it's as if defaulted. On the other hand, Gabe Sadeh, Kavalo Zman le Perot Akshav, Lotuchala Perot, Imloefralacha le Yom Ploni, Achol Perot, Achefrem Otecha. He says, when you default on the loan, I will start taking the Perot from the field. So there, even if the Zman comes and he defaults, he still doesn't own the property because all he owns is the Perot. So that's the way Rashi explains it over here. So Rashi says there are two failures over here. One is that, in the case of Eved, it's lo mata zimne. It's prior to the default. And number two is that the nature of the transaction was that he gave up the full ownership in the Eved Kanani. So those two things make it that even prior to his defaulting, he loses the Eved Kanani. And certainly if he defaults, he loses the Eved Kanani. In the case of the Sadeh, then neither has he defaulted. And even if he defaults, he only gets a peirot out of the field, not the field itself. So that's why he's patur mimaser. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot disagrees and says, "V'tema, kevin da'ad lo matza zimne lo perot, may shach lamar patur amina maser." If we're talking about here before he defaults, and even if he defaults, he only gets perot. Why do you have to tell me that it's patur amina maser? It's obvious if he only gets perot in the end and he's yet to default, that he's patur amina maser. There's nothing to discuss over here. So then, why would they bright to bring that down? And therefore, Tosafot says, "Nira the faresh." He explains how gufa. How the peira differently, and he says this: how the gufa peira, kamo ha gufa v'ha peira. That's the explanation of the difference between the two cases, which is digabi eved afakav delo mata zimne ha guf bebeit oved kochavim umafkio mina mitzvot. That even though by the eved kanani there is no default yet on the loan, but in the interim the oved kochavim takes possession of the mashkon and keeps the Eved Kanani in his house in the interim as a mashkon. That means that the problem has already started right now. The problem is, he's living in Oved Kochavim, it's mufkam in a mitzvot. That happened already because he's staying in the Oved Kochavim's house, even though the guf has not transferred yet. Mishumachi would say the cherut immediately. Avo basadeh, ein le Yisrael ala peirot. That Israel who gets it as a mashkon collects the peirot from it, even if he collects them immediately. Still doesn't matter because it's in the possession of the Oved Kochavim. The karka still belongs to Oved Kochavim. So what Tosafot suggests is here, both of them are before a default. But the nature of what will happen when they default then makes it that before the default, there's a difference. That by the Eved, when he defaults, he'll fully go to this Oved Kochavim and he stays with the Oved Kochavim beforehand. There's a change in the status of the Eved, but in the halachic ramifications, there's no change. He's already mufgam in a mitzvot up front. And so that's why the kanas kicks in. By the sadeh, you get payroll before, you get payroll afterwards, so it doesn't really matter. The karka is not yours, and that's why you're patur min amaser. So that's the way Tosafot explains the difference. He says guf and payre are explaining you the difference between Eved and sadeh, as opposed to Rashi saying that the cases are completely different. Vi baitema, and others suggest, bishalaval manat the mashkano velo mashkano. The case here is a case where he lent him on condition of collateral, but he doesn't take the collateral. So then Rashi says over here, despite the fact that the collateral was never taken, the Chachamim enter in here and make it a kanas, which is that even though you defaulted now on the loan and he didn't bother to take the collateral, the Chachamim penalize you because you defaulted, you put up a pledge of your Eved Kanani, and in the end, he would have ended up with the Oved Kochavim, just you got lucky that he didn't come and take him. So just the fact that you got lucky and didn't come and take him, that's not a good enough reason that the kanas doesn't apply to you. It applies to you and you lose the Eved Kanani. On the other hand, by the case of the field, if default on the loan and doesn't take the field in possession, then he doesn't own the field yet. If he doesn't own the field yet, then he can't be chayav in Shumot Masrot because it's still in possession of the Oved Kochavim. That's the way Rashi explains it. Again, Tosafot rejects that because he says, according to Rashi's explanation, it said, say, iti v'iti demata zimne. It should say both cases here is where he defaults. And the difference is that whether you take the collateral or not makes a difference between these two cases. That's the way Rashi's explaining it. V'kach nira, Tosafot gives an alternative to this, da'ata l'shnuniye shnuiye kama. It's going back to the original answer that one of them is a default and one of them is not a default. Ah, what do you say that by an Eved, that when he defaults, you have to tell me that when he borrows the money and he takes a mashkon? Of course, when you default and an Eved Kanani is the pledge, you're going to lose him and you're going to have the Kanas supply. No, the case here is the Lo Mashkano. He didn't take him. He never took the mashkon. So that's why it's a Chiddush. The Chiddush is that by the case of Eved Kanani, he defaulted. That's why he loses him. Ah, that's obvious. No, he didn't take him yet as a mashkon. Despite the fact that he didn't take him as a mashkon, you consider as if he took him and you lose him now. On the case of the field, the reason that you're not chayvim maser is because he didn't default on the loan. Since he didn't default on the loan, therefore, he doesn't own the karka now. And that's why you're not chayav in shumot maserot. Okay, we're going to end here on the two dots on the top of Mem Daled Amud Aleph.